This is a big year. The Ohio Lottery's golden anniversary. 50 years of excitement, of growing jackpots and crossed fingers. 50 years of funding for schools, of changed lives and brightened days. 50 years of fun, and that is worth celebrating. So watch for can't-miss promotions, huge events, and new games that will make the Ohio Lottery's 50th year its biggest one yet. Learn more at funturns50.com.
The South Dakota Stories, Volume 5. South Dakota seemed like the perfect place to unplug. But I ended up connecting to the world around me. A world where each sunset was painted. Where I felt adventures pulse with every step. And where cold water trickling, pine swaying, and grunting bison became my favorite soundtracks. I just wish I didn't have to leave. There's so much South Dakota, so little time.
The first degree.
These things are supposed to happen in movies, not in real life.
Hey guys, welcome to The First Degree, the true crime podcast that you might end up on. My name is Jack Vanek. I'm sitting across from Alexis Linkletter and next to Billy Jensen.
We're here really late tonight because we're working on part two of The Nightmare on Hickory Street. If you guys haven't listened to part one, go listen. Don't start that. You guys are not going to understand anything that's going on because this is out of control.
And you also need to understand why we're all three now dead inside.
Yeah.
So this is why
I'm dead inside, but somehow flustered and somehow so f***ing pissed off.
Disturbed. Scared of my own friends. Scared at parties.
Yeah. Just so anyways.
Scared of humanity in general.
Yeah. It's exactly. Pretty disturbing. So yeah, go listen to part one, Nightmare on Hickory Street. It was our last episode. And are you going to give like kind of a little recap of where we're at now?
Yes. So where we left off in part one is all four of our suspects were in custody. And they continue to be interrogated. And as they remain in police custody, more and more information about the details that ensued after these senseless, callous murders continue to come to light. And the suspects have all confessed to the murders, but now some of them are revealing some even more deranged information. And I know the clip we played at the end of part one and the clip we played at the top of this episode has kind of foreshadowed what's to come, and it is more disturbing than any of us could have anticipated.
Now, this is coming straight from the police report, and it states that Josh piled the two bodies together and placed this beige sheet across them so that his girlfriend Alyssa could lie together on top of them. And Josh told the police that he remembered that years back his girlfriend had told him that she wanted to have sex with a dead guy, so he thought, based on the circumstances, while they were thinking of all these other things about how we get rid of the bodies or whatever, I can help fulfill this fantasy, or at least part of this fantasy. So he said that Alyssa grinned when she asked, you know, do you want to have sex and, on top of them? And she initially declined. And then later she admitted and she agreed to do it. So they got on top of them and they had sex.
Well,
I mean,
one of the most, I mean, just the complete lack, just like further humiliating mm-hmm. and desecrating mm-hmm. victims that you've already stolen so much from.
Yeah.
You know, we talked about this a little bit in the Luca Magnotta episodes with what he did on video to Jun Lin's body, what Luca Magnotta did afterwards. It's just like further humiliation, further objectification, just complete sick decision making here. And it just shows, I mean, killing people is just already
it's
the ultimate crime.
Right.
And the lack of empathy is so overwhelming that this is just like some heinous shit that I can't even
do we
with a straight face.
Do we know that this fantasy of necrophilia was true from Alyssa? Did she ever admit to that?
She did.
Okay.
She did.
God. Mm-hmm. Like, and also, let's remember that she's 18 years old. So to be having these kind of fantasies years back, quote unquote, so you're in your early to mid teens having these kind of thoughts. I hadn't even kissed a boy until I was 16 years old. And those are the kind of thoughts that are going through some of these children's heads is unbelievable.
Yeah, I didn't learn what necrophilia was till I was an adult.
Barely knew what sex
was. From Long Island, there was a rapper. His name was Necro.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and I remember being like, "That's such a silly rap name." And then after high school, someone explained to me what that was, and I looked it up. But the idea that you would be attracted to that at such a young age and have fantasies—I didn't have sexual fantasies then. I didn't even
know.
My brain was not there.
No,
it's so interesting, but. We don't work around kids or work around high school kids or kids this age. Let's see what Bethany's teacher has to say about this, Sarah, because we've still got her as our resource in getting some insight into this case. And she had something interesting to say.
I've worked with students who have, like, you know, traumatic past. But, like, why would that lead to you doing something like that? You know, that's just very messed up in your head. So you definitely need some counseling outside of school therapy for that. The necrophilia fantasy and whatnot. Like, I enjoy those, and this is weird, but I like reading about, like, serial killers' past. And you do hear about, like, Jeffrey Dahmer. Like, he fantasized about that, too, when he was younger. I think the biggest thing, really, is it's not how young they are, but the fact that, like, therapy and being different is taboo. And so they won't get the help that they need because it might be frowned upon in their community. Like, if you're having those fantasies, you need to go talk to somebody because that's not normal.
All right, so Sarah's not the only one with some insight and opinion on this entire thing, with Elisa having this fantasy and this intercourse that happened on top of these victims. Our mastermind, Josh, who sat in jail rotting where he belongs, also had some things to say and had an excuse for where this information came from and why it was said. And he's got a whole backstory. But again, take this all with a grain of salt, because clearly we can't believe anything he says.
When they were doing the interrogation thing, when I was in county, I sent a kite to Adam to say, what the f***, what's going on? And he sends a kite back to me. He was like, hey, I was just trying to place crazy and everything. I was telling him every extra shit that there was, being crazy and everything. And that's pretty much what it was. It was like, dude went in there and, like, instantly thinking, the crazier he is, he'd be able to get off of something. I don't know exactly how he was thinking, but how is having sex on or with or whatever with a body even come to a guy's mind like that? We all were drunk. Yeah. Like, we all were still drinking on a couple of beers and everything. We had 230 cases plus light and dark alcohol. We were trashed. And we were up for like 2-3 days straight of being trashed, smoking weed, doing some coke. And when the guys came over, we were drunk, we were high. The guys pissed us off, which shit happened. Then when they interrogated us, we were way hungover. We were withdrawn from like cocaine and weed. And I was withdrawn from other drugs. And we're just being hungover. You're all drowsy and you don't know what the hell's going on and shit. I told them like 3-4 different stories at first. And then after everything, they're like, oh, blah, blah. He says it was a robbery. He says you're having sex on the body, this, that. I'm like, at first, I'm like, what the f***? Yeah, okay, whatever. We're doing it on the side. We're doing it on the side. I was like, okay, we're doing this, we're doing that. I'm like, okay, are we done? And then they were like, yeah, okay, thanks. And they kept giving me cigarettes. So I was smoking a cigarette after cigarette after cigarette. Every time I answer a question, they'll give me a cigarette.
Yeah.
So I was like, fuck it, give me a cigarette.
Okay, so to recap what Josh is saying, he's claiming that Adam is saying that they wanted to have sex on top of these bodies to try to claim an insanity defense.
Make him seem crazy.
Yeah, to make him seem crazy. But then Elisa also admitted the same thing in a completely separate interrogation.
Right, and Bethany knew about it. So obviously, this is just something he's saying to try to backpedal out of doing this really sick disturbing thing.
Right.
Which he clearly did.
Yes.
And it was rumored that Adam joined in, and it was this threesome. It's just, it's like a sick horror movie. I can't even wrap my brain around this. These interrogations are happening because they're all in custody, and they're all being indicted for first-degree murder and the charges against them for all these crimes stemming from what they've done to Terrence and Eric. And they're all in custody, and their $10 million bails are set. So they are not going anywhere. The county's taking this really seriously.
And this is, it's laughable reading this right now. But one of the suspects had the audacity to complain about the jail's conditions. And guess who it was? It was Adam, the son of a police officer.
Son of a police officer.
So he filed this 15-count complaint about prison, saying that the temperature is not to his liking, the menu doesn't have enough variety, and he complained about a lack of a barber service, which is
surreal.
What?
Get out of here.
And that he said the items sold in the prison commissary are too expensive. He was also upset that there's no breakfast after 6:30. Wake up earlier, you piece of shit. And he said that lunch is too early and wants free shaving cream for inmates. Like,
his entitlement is surreal.
It's insane. Just to think that you can even, like, that you're even worth filing this complaint is unbelievable to me.
And then Adam, dude, he, his interrogation, it's like, they pretty much instantly was like, your mother's one of us, we got your back, don't worry. And that's how it was. I seen his interrogation thing, and that's pretty much exactly what they said to him, was like, your mother's a JPD, don't worry, we got your back, just tell us everything. And he instantly, like, told him everything plus some.
Yeah, so the police obviously didn't care that his mom was one of them, and they were just using this to get him to open up, and it worked because he spilled his guts, and that's why we know what he's saying is true. Anyway, so that's a side note, but all this is happening while these kids are in custody. The DA's office is drafting their indictments and, you know, building their case against these suspects, and at some point within this process, a very questionable, controversial decision is made. And before I tell you what that is, I want to remind everyone of each suspect's admitted role in these crimes. Bethany invited the men over and essentially set them up to be ambushed and killed. Josh and Adam admitted to the physical killings of these two victims. Elisa was the person who lived at the house and also was involved in this entire planning process. All of them were involved in desecrating the corpses afterwards, concealing the homicides from numerous people. And Elisa, Josh, and Adam were involved in possible sexual activity on around the bodies. So this is everybody's admitted roles in this. So I wanted to set that up and give you a reminder before we reveal what you're about to hear next.
So you see this a lot when you have multiple suspects of a single crime. They will often go for potentially the weakest suspect, the police will, and try to get a plea so that suspect will testify against the other suspects.
Mm-hmm.
Happens all the time. Okay, so the prosecutors decide to approach one of the suspects and offer them a plea deal. And the plea deal is in exchange for testimony against the others. And they approach, and usually what this happens is they approach the, what they think is the weak link. So they obviously thought the weak link or the least guilty or whatever, whatever is in their mindset of how they can get a conviction against the other three, they approach Elisa. And they say, you know, will you plea out to this, testify against your friends, and you'll get a deal. And this became a huge surprise to the other defendants, especially Bethany. And Bethany was actually seen crying when she learned of this deal. And Bethany's father, Bill McKee, he was completely shocked of this deal because his daughter had not been approached. They didn't go to Bethany about the plea deal at all. And by all accounts, you know, by many accounts, and you know, you as the listener will have to decide that, Bethany might very well be the least culpable out of all of them.
Mm-hmm.
But they go to Alyssa and they say, we'll give you very little jail time compared to everybody else if you will testify against your friends. So she accepts the deal. And she pleads guilty to robbery and concealment of a homicide. And she's sentenced to 10 years. That's it, 10 years. Mm. But, and here's the another strange thing on top of everything else that's strange. She's only required to testify in Bethany's trial. She agreed to testify against all three of them, but she's only called to testify in Bethany's trial.
Why?
So this is the question. Everyone's confessed, completely confessed in videotaped confessions.
Yeah, doesn't this, a plea deal usually happens when there's probably not enough evidence or...
Absolutely.
Usually, yeah.
Absolutely. Not only that, it's like the mastermind was completely confessing, the two men who had actually...
He couldn't shut up.
Of course. And I want to be really clear, they all deserve to either be in jail, life without parole, or die, in my opinion. These people are terrible, terrible individuals. My issue is that she got a deal, not that it's unfair for the others. The others deserve to be in jail. My issue is that she's not going to rot in jail.
Yeah.
Not that the others don't get out. They all deserve to be in there. But Alyssa, especially.
She also deserves to be in there.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So I don't understand the prosecutors doing this.
Why would you think that they would only approach her without approaching Bethany whatsoever?
I have no.
Well, they're always going to choose one. They're going to go for one first. If she says no, they would go for the other one. So it was either choose Alyssa or choose Bethany.
But why wouldn't... It's just so weird. Why wouldn't they go for Bethany?
Maybe she's just better. Maybe she's more charming. Maybe they just bought that.
Yeah.
She's not the one who called asking for help disposing of the bodies. Maybe she just is better.
They saw something with her and said, we're going to go with this one, and this is going to be our best bet.
Even though she did this deranged sexual thing and admitted to it, they still offered her this deal. So she's obviously got some rhetorical genius with individuals, because like you have to be pretty smart to be a prosecutor. So I don't understand. You're not dumb if you're a district attorney or an assistant district attorney or even just a lawyer. You're not dumb. And they made this decision for a reason. We don't know what that is. But anyways, back to the story. So we're all outraged here at this deal. I can't even believe I've never heard of this and that more people weren't upset about it. But I can tell you who was super upset about it besides us. And Jack, who was that?
It was the families of the victims.
Yeah.
I mean,
aren't prosecutors supposed to consult with families about these deals?
No, not all. No.
But isn't that the right thing to do?
It seems like it would be the right thing to do, but no. What they're going in is saying, and we see this so often, it's a matter of whether the prosecutor believes, and it's based on a bunch of factors. They seem like they know what their juries are going to be like, what the situation is, and they're going to say, well, you know what? I might have an 80% chance of getting a conviction if I go for all four of them. I would have a 99% chance of conviction if I can go and get one of those four to flip.
They waived their right to jury trials and they all had bench trials. So what that means is that they opted not to have a jury decide their fate and just have a judge.
Oh, wow.
Mm-hmm. And they all decided to do that.
And what do you think the reasoning was for Alyssa only testifying in Bethany's trial and not the boys?
Because they had the least on Bethany because she didn't do it physically.
Right.
So those guys were admitting.
So they needed testimony.
They needed the testimony to confirm that she conspired. What her intentions were, and just kind of they were together. They went downstairs, the signal. They needed to just confirm, but it also implicated herself directly. So I don't know. This isn't justice to me, and this is the problem I have with the justice system, where it's like these people are arbitrarily chosen.
Yeah.
And that's not fair. There should have been no deal in this case, honestly.
No, absolutely not.
Yeah, absolutely not.
So Eric Glover's sister ended up organizing a rally at the courthouse to protest Elise's plea deal. A ton of people showed up to support, but nothing changed because the plea deal train was already moving and it wasn't stopping as all the other trials approached.
Hey, there's no reason to feel sad or guilty about the things you aren't using anymore. Whether it was a fancy dress you wore to a gala, expensive heels that only go with one of your outfits, or that crossbody bag from when you were in your music festival era. Somebody out there wants what you don't, and the real world makes it easy to get it to them. When your past becomes their future, everyone wins, especially the planet. For the real world, Earth Month isn't just another month. It's what they do every day. At any given moment, they're finding new homes for over 1 million unique items within their community of 35 plus million people. They're the largest luxury reseller in the world and making a tangible difference towards a more sustainable future for fashion. Resale reduces the amount of fashion waste in landfills, lowers greenhouse gas emissions, and offers an alternative to the cycle of consumption propagated by fast fashion. The RealReal has kept over 37 million items in circulation and out of landfills. This month only, new shoppers get 20% off when they shop on TheRealReal.com using code FIRST. That's TheRealReal.com using the code FIRST.
Why are smart businesses graduating to NetSuite by Oracle? Because NetSuite eliminates the expense of multiple business systems by consolidating your operations together into one. NetSuite is the number one cloud financial system, bringing accounting, financial management, inventory, and HR into one platform and one source of truth. NetSuite reduces IT costs because it lives in the cloud with no hardware required, so you can access it from anywhere. You cut the cost and headaches of maintaining multiple systems because you've got one unified business management suite. Bringing all your major business processes into one platform improves efficiency, slashing manual tasks and errors. Over 37,000 companies have already made the move, so do the math. You'll see how you'll profit with NetSuite too. And now, by popular demand, NetSuite has extended its one-of-a-kind flexible financing program for a few more weeks. Just go to netsuite.com/podcast25 for more information. That's netsuite.com/podcast25.
Like I said, they all had bench trials. They waived their rights to jury trials, which just means the judge decides whether they're convicted, guilty or not, and they also determine the sentence. So then what happened to the other three?
So they're all tried separately. Josh, Bethany, and Adam, they're each facing first-degree murder trials. Bethany went on trial and ended up being convicted of the first-degree murder of both men. And even though she didn't physically participate in the strangulation of the men, the state law requires an automatic mandatory life sentence when found guilty of two murders. Woof.
Automatic life sentences for all of them.
Now, was that because of the two murders, or was that because there were special circumstances because of the robbery?
I believe it's just capital murder. It's either life without parole or, you know, death penalty.
Mm-hmm.
I'd have to read up on Illinois's death penalty laws. I'm not familiar, so don't quote me on that.
Mm.
But apparently under the theory of accountability, which is what Bethany was convicted under. So prosecutors argue that she knew or should have known that the two men could be killed as part of the robbery, which she was the catalyst to, because she's the one who invited Terrence over.
Right.
And he brought Eric. So she should have known that in developing this plan to rob these two men, there was a chance they could die and that she would be held responsible. This is a crazy, crazy sequence of events. Let's hear what our first degree connection, Sarah, has to say about the sentence of her former student and how it contrasts against Elisa's.
I definitely think there's a flaw in, you know, especially how this case has proceeded. And, you know, I haven't read too much into detail about, you know, exactly who was a part of what, but I know that Bethany, like you said, didn't or wasn't a part of the actual crime or the actual killing. So I don't understand, you know, why she got life in jail without, you know, in terms of anything else. She didn't even get or that Elisa was able to testify against her, and Bethany didn't get that chance. I don't understand it, and I think it definitely needs to be revamped. it's just very confusing. And I don't understand, like, if that's how the criminal justice system works, then that, yeah, definitely needs to change. And without understanding all the facts, I don't understand how it connected, where they would say, okay, she's fine, but you're not. They didn't. And if anything, Alyssa had more to do with, you know, what was happening.
And like before, Sarah, Bethany's teacher, is not the only person with an opinion on this whole Bethany Alyssa deal situation. So let's hear the mastermind's opinion on all of this also.
I think Alyssa got a decent deal, but she should have been even a better deal because that shit was bogus. And the Bethany girl, I really think that she should have got a deal or something, like, of just a robbery or conspiracy or something. She should have had to be charged with both bodies. That's straight bullshit. It was the guy's idea, technically. The guy kept calling and texting her. Like, they kept bringing up the texts and stuff, my texts and her texts. They should have brought up the texts that the guy was calling her. They had nothing to do with nothing. But Bethany, the luring was bullshit. The guy wanted her. The guy wanted to come over and hang out with her. The guy brought his friend, my girl. Well, my bust down, whatever you want to call her. So two guys, two girls. That's all they were thinking. And Bethany, she didn't know what the was going on. She went downstairs to go get cigarettes. They both went downstairs to go get cigarettes. How the hell are they going to know that my frustration, my anger upset at everything, and then I took it against myself to fight these guys.
All right, so again, we can't believe a word this guy says because he's just trying to cover his own ass and make it seem like none of this was planned. Because then
trying to backpedal,
it makes it seem like it's second degree and not first degree. So you can't buy anything this guy says. Just a reminder here, but most people were very pleased with Bethany's conviction and the convictions of the other three. Everyone was pissed about Alyssa's. That's a given. But people were very relieved about Bethany's.
And at Bethany's trial, the judge stated, quote, "A review of the facts shows a stunning lack of respect for human life, as well as a stunning lack of concern for the consequences of taking two human lives." He also said that Bethany had a lot of opportunities to back out of this plot, but instead talk with the defendant, with the co-defendants, about getting rid of the bodies, and then actually spent her share of the money that was stolen from the victims.
So they're all sent to jail. Alyssa started serving her 10-year sentence. Bethany, Josh, and Adam were starting to serve their life without parole sentences in maximum security prison. And if you guys are wondering how Alyssa's doing in prison, we can't really tell you because she is already f***ing out. She was paroled in February of this year after only 4 years, and she is a free woman.
It is...
Whoa.
Scary.
Did she go back to Juliet? Do we know?
So... not only did she go back to Juliet, she went right back to that home on Hickory Street where this entire nightmare started.
Wow.
That's insane.
Well, and the news of her release didn't land well with the neighbors that surrounded.
Obviously.
The neighbors were horrified, angry, and they knew word of her release reached that town, you know, like a week before it happened, and they were interviewing neighbors. People were outraged.
Yeah, I read a few articles about that.
Outraged. Yeah, no, people were really terrified. It's like, this girl has issues.
I mean, the balls on that girl to go back to that house.
And she didn't change her name or anything. She just went back there, went back to the actual house. And this house becomes, and the story becomes this urban legend in this town. This, you know, the house becomes a landmark, and you see these houses, and you know, whenever you're going to pass by this house, and obviously neighbors are thinking, they're always going to be thinking of the lives of the victims, but they're also thinking about their properties and their property values, and people are driving by saying, hey, that's the house that two people were murdered, and then somebody had sex over their dead bodies.
Right. And we asked Sarah, Bethany's teacher, about this too, because she lives in the area. So let's see what she knows and if she's visited the house herself.
I think I did drive by it once. Or maybe I looked it up on Google Maps. It's a pretty creepy. I mean, just knowing that what happened there is creepy enough. But I think it's a pretty rundown little area too.
So she said that this street, Hickory Street, this is a little rundown area. Well, since this happened, they cannot sell homes in this area.
Shocker.
I was just looking. They were trying to sell the home across the street for $35,000.
Oh, my God.
And they could not. They haven't. It's been on the market forever. And again, this place is only, 20 miles, 30 miles outside of Chicago. It's not in like...
It's commuter distance. Yeah.
Sure. And it's like they can't get rid of this house for 30. I'll go buy it. I'll go live there for 30.
You should go check it out first and see what kind of vibe you feel when you're on that street.
Right. But, this didn't help the area.
No.
In now this, there's this whole kind of like legend of the Nightmare on Hickory Street around there.
Yeah. And you get this, probably the most famous house when we're thinking of houses, is the Amityville Horror House. And you've got all that jazz about it being haunted and the book that was written. That's all crap. What really happened is that a kid killed his entire family because he was a drug addict and he wanted to get the money from it. But when you go to that house, and I've gone to it before about 20 years ago and knocked on the door and got yelled at by the owner, because, I was just trying to get a story and just trying to say, hey, can I go see your basement or whatever? Because I was working on a story for a newspaper, you got this amazing house, which is right on the water. And you probably saved $300,000 or $400,000 off the purchase price because, something horrible happened in there. When you have these houses in these neighborhoods, they bring a pall over the neighborhood. And even in a house like the Sharon Tate house, which you can't even see from the street, but it's in such a posh community and the land is worth so much that they just tore it down.
Mm-hmm. Well, because they didn't want spectators.
No. People still go up there, but you can't see it anyway.
Right.
Yeah.
So the house remains, whether Elisa still lives there or not. I mean, she was released in just February of 2018. I can't imagine she's gotten her shit together in just a few months.
Do we know if she lives with her dad there?
Yes.
Oh, she does?
Mm-hmm. It's her dad's house.
Oh,
she got out of jail with no prospects, I'm sure. They're all real winners. So,
wow.
So obviously they're all in jail now. The others are serving life without parole sentences. And when we were doing our research, we were doing perusing as we do.
Mm-hmm. We love to peruse.
And we found Bethany on a prisoner pen pal website. So here's some highlights from her posted bio that Jack's going to share with you.
We love like a
fun fact.
A prisoner
bio.
Bio. It's so good.
It's
all right.
Good.
From Bethany. I try to find different ways to improve myself. I've changed a lot, though I still have a long way to go. I'm huge on, quote, you have to give respect to get it. I don't like liars, phonies, bullies, wasteful people, hypocrites, and people who can't take constructive criticism. I like people who are open to new ideas and experiences, are intelligent, silly, sweet, not selfish, strong-willed, dominant, and humble. I like people that I can be myself around. I'm a very sentimental person. The little things mean a lot to me.
Little things, not big things like human life.
Yeah. Like murder. Really?
Oh,
God. Yeah.
Oh, the delusion, the complete hypocrisy. I don't like hypocrites. Okay, but you're saying you have to give respect to get it. I don't like liars, phonies, bullies, wasteful people.
You are all those things.
Of those things and worse.
And I want to point out that when I was looking at some article about her, and it was talking about her demeanor after being arrested and everything, and it said that she just had like no emotion and wasn't like remorseful about anything, and nothing pissed her off really except for when her dad called the police on her. Like, that was the only thing she was pissed off about and upset about the whole entire thing that was going on.
Well, okay, so I saw something in an article about that. So, you know, in the top of the episode, we were talking about how she was staying with Elisa. She blamed her dad for this entire
thing. Oh, yeah, yeah, that's what it was.
She's like, well, you're the one who kicked me out, so this is your fault. And her dad, I mean, has stood by her. I mean, there's a blog.
Their family has, like, a whole website about
trying to exonerate her.
Yeah.
But why, I'm not really sure, because I'm at a loss. I'm at a total loss.
I think we're all at a loss.
But that's the one place. I mean, she sees that as I don't want to go psychoanalyzing this woman, but she sees that as the betrayal of her father betraying her. Not only calling
who, Bethany
the cops
thinks
on
that?
Her. Yeah, yeah. But it's
the ultimate
the day,
betrayal. How dare you?
Exactly. At the end of the day, there's two people that you are very much responsible for not being alive.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Well, and, you know, we didn't get into the nitty-gritty of each one of the perpetrators' backgrounds, because I'm sure, you know, when I talked to Sarah, she was like, well, they all have emotional disturbances. She worked at, like, a therapeutic school. But I don't care. Like, mm-hmm. This is... You could be...
There's no excuse for anything
that
these kids said.
So we didn't get out of that. We didn't get into that because, like, really, the people who should be focused on are the victims. And they all had big families. Eric had a fiance. They had promising futures. They were lovely people by all accounts. And honestly, also, when I was doing the research, I always do this with every subject of all of our stories. I search on Facebook to see either if their Facebooks are still active, if there is a memorial page. And, of course, I found in this case a memorial Facebook page for Terrence Rankins. And the last post was made on January 10th, 2017, and presumably by a family member who runs this page. And it reads, today makes 4 years you were taken from us. This is still so very hard and surreal because you didn't deserve this. Neither did Eric, but I know you guys are watching over us. We always asked our parents to check under the bed for monsters, but our parents failed to mention that the true monsters live within us. Just never thought people would actually dig that deep to bring it out. I hope those four continue to rot in jail and in hell.
Damn.
Yeah, and then one of the four is actually out right now.
Yeah. God.
That has to be
the hardest thing for the victims' families to swallow, that she is out of jail now.
So the loss of life in this case is the real travesty, but the miscarriage of justice, as far as Elisa goes, I'd say is the second.
Mm-hmm.
And again, I don't think the other ones should be out sooner because of it, or I don't think any of them deserved a deal. She deserved the same as the others. And this shows a crack in our judicial system, undeniably.
And it's also, it's just our judicial system, but we always say the judicial system as if it's one giant thing. It's 19,000 different, you know, law enforcement agencies. And this is just one DA's office saying this is going to be easier to do it like this.
I disagree, because I think as far as the power a district attorney has to make arbitrary decisions, as far as justice goes, is a power that all DA's offices are given. Whether it be sentencing,
yeah.
You can choose. We're going to go after a death penalty case in this one. It's high profile. We're going to choose this person to give a deal to. This person, we're going to plea out. We're going to either, you know, it was a mistrial. We're going to try him again, or we're not. I mean, the arbitrary nature of a district attorney's office in determining people's lives.
It'd be great. I see so many crimes that aren't solved because law enforcement agencies don't work together. This is another thing where we don't have a country being able to say, you know what, this is the law. You have leeway in order to identify it and interpret it the way you see fit.
This was a very unique case. We covered it for a number of reasons. Obviously, we wanted to get into just the deprived mind that, you know, someone next to you may mm-hmm. have. Elise is out there walking free. So she could be a person you meet at a party.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just like, this person was involved in this and she could be using a different name. And there are thousands of Elises out there.
I mean, it's pretty terrifying because, I mean, we started this being like, you don't know if a monster who is capable of XYZ could be sitting next to you, and there are monsters out there that have already done something like this that are walking free.
The majority of the population, their instinct is to be trusting. Mm-hmm. I certainly am, because if you are not a psychopath, you're not thinking like one.
Right.
And but they're out there, and it's chilling. And, you know, a big push for us to do this episode, despite the really horrific nature, is because Elise is out.
Yeah.
And it's like she's not getting off scot-free. At the very least, you guys are going to know that this happened and that she did this.
Right.
And I'm not a fan of the death penalty. I really do believe that people can rehabilitate themselves, even if they have to spend their entire life in jail, which many of them should, and which many murderers should. They should be able to redeem themselves somehow, or redeem themselves in terms of humanity somehow. And you just hope that this woman will do that in some way, shape, or form.
I wouldn't hold your breath on that one.
Yeah, I know. I wouldn't either.
I think the name of this case, Nightmare on Hickory Street, is definitely fitting for this case, just because it's a nightmare. It's a nightmare for everybody that was involved. The parents of the two boys who were killed, the parents of all these kids that were involved. I mean, and obviously what they did was what happens in nightmares. It's disgusting. It's disturbing. And I honestly would hope to never dream or have a dream about this, but I definitely think that a nightmare on Hickory Street is fitting, and it can even turn into, it sounds like it's a movie almost, you know, how disgusting and disturbing it is. And then just, you know, obviously Alyssa with her fantasies too. It's definitely disturbing. I haven't ever seen anything like it in a movie. And I hope not to, because this is something that will always haunt my waking hours.
On that note, I need to drink like a whole bottle of wine after this one. I don't know about you guys. Again, this case happened. Well, this case didn't happen. This episode happened because of a listener, and she was our first degree connection. We're crowdsourcing this podcast. Please write in if you guys have a first degree connection to a murder or other stranger than fiction story. Hello at thefirstdegreepodcast.com. My brain isn't working. thefirstdegreepodcast.com, or write us on Instagram at thefirstdegree, at Alexis Linkletter, at Billy Jensen, at Jack Vanek. Please rate and review our podcast. 5 stars only, nothing less. And
I also want to say, sometimes people put 1 star with a great compliment, and I think you're confused about the rating system. It's 5 stars good, 1 star bad.
This isn't Converse. It's not just like 1 star.
I'm telling you, that's what they do. They'll be like, amazing podcast. Why isn't it better rated? I'm like, because you gave it 1 star.
Asshole.
It's 5 is good, 1 is bad.
Just in case you've never rated anything in your life before. But anyways, keep your friends close. But not that close. It's perfect for this podcast episode, right, Alexis?
Yes, over and out.
Sources for this episode include the Joliet Patch, the Chicago Tribune, and CBS News.
Why are smart businesses graduating to NetSuite by Oracle? Because NetSuite eliminates the expense of multiple business systems by consolidating your operations together into one. NetSuite is the number one cloud financial system, bringing accounting, financial management, inventory, and HR into one platform and one source of truth. NetSuite reduces IT costs because it lives in the cloud with no hardware required, so you can access it from anywhere. You cut the cost and headaches of maintaining multiple systems because you've got one unified business management suite. Bringing all your major business processes into one platform improves efficiency, slashing manual tasks and errors. Over 37,000 companies have already made the move, so do the math. You'll see how you'll profit with NetSuite, too. And now, by popular demand, NetSuite has extended its one-of-a-kind flexible financing program for a few more weeks. Just go to netsuite.com/podcast25 for more information. That's netsuite.com/podcast25.